Hi, I'm Laura.
And I'm Joe.
And this is Crime Divers.
Hello everybody, welcome to today's episode.
Hello everyone, welcome back.
So thanks for joining us once again, and today we have a lot of sword.
We do have a lot of sword.
So where in the world are we?
We're in the UK.
Okay, and what's the name of your episode?
It is called The Cable Tie Killer.
Okay, so shall we just dive in?
Let's dive in. Leanne Tiernan was born on the 27th of September 1984 to parents Michael Tiernan and Sharon Hockhead. They lived in Bramley in Leeds, West Yorkshire. Leanne, who was now 16, she went on a Christmas shopping trip with her friend, who was 15-year-old Sarah Whitehouse. They had been in Leeds City Centre, and they had got the bus back to Bramley at about 10 to 5 that evening. So I think because Leanne was like the older one, she liked to make sure that her friend got home okay, so she actually got off at Sharon's bus stop.
Right.
So just to make sure that she was home safe.
Oh, me and my friends used to do that sometimes.
Yeah, I think she was like the older one. She obviously wanted to take the responsibility. So she just like, I think it was like 3 or 4 stops away from where she might be lived. So it wasn't like a far place. But so she got off. So once they got off the bus, obviously Leanne made sure that Sarah was okay. So they then parted ways and she began the walk back to her house. Mm. So Leanne headed off along an unlit path through an area of wooded wasteland known as Hofflegill. I laughed because it's spelt as in Jill.
It's Jill, yeah.
But it's Hofflegill. So I need to remember to say Gill and not Jill. So when Sarah obviously arrived home, because I don't think she'd turned her right to her door, but right, obviously just sort of made sure she was nearby. So when she got home, she decided to phone Leanne. I guess she must have been phoning to make sure that she'd go home all right as well. So she'd phoned her, but she was surprised to find out that she hadn't arrived home because she thought she should have been home by then. Leanne's mum, Sharon, decided to ring her mobile phone to find out where she was, but the phone just kept ringing before eventually being cut off. She rang again, and this time it was cut off after 4 rings. So
it was like somebody had hung up.
Yeah, it was like somebody had hung up that time. It was the first time I think it just rang out. But that time they thought, she thought it had just been cut off. So at around 7 p.m, Sharon, she decided to ring the police because she was like, well, this is like, she should be home by now. Because bear in mind, this is December, so it would have been dark, really early. And obviously knowing that, she'd been with Sarah and she'd got home and stuff, she's like, well, where is she? Why has she not arrived home? So she decided to ring the police and report Leanne missing. So, she gave the police a description of Leanne and that was that. So the police, they immediately began a missing person inquiry, which they called Operation Conifer. Obviously, they didn't call it that at that moment, but they do call it that. So that was headed up by a detective superintendent called Chris Gregg. So a search of the area where Leanne was last seen got underway, but no trace of her was found. And as the inquiry progressed, it actually became one of the largest ever undertaken by West Yorkshire Police, involving up to 200 officers and hundreds of volunteers. So more than 1,400 house-to-house inquiries were conducted along her probable route, and the police called it the Red Route. 800 houses along with 800 sheds, garages and outbuildings were searched. 150 commercial premises within a half-mile radius were also searched. So, the girl just vanished, basically. Mm. Totally no idea what happened to her. The police, they took DNA samples from 140 men who were interviewed by police in connection with the inquiry. There was 12 search warrants were done at various addresses in Leeds. The West Yorkshire Police Underwater Search Unit carried out a search of a 3-mile section of Leeds and Liverpool Canal between Spring Garden Lock and Bramley Falls. 2 miles of it was actually drained to a depth of 1 metre. The unit also searched 32 drain shafts. Yorkshire Water were also called in to help locate disused and abandoned drains and wells. And bin collections were halted so that police could search all the bins in the area for evidence. But
it sounds like they were pretty thorough.
Yeah. So that's basically the over sort of view of it. I'm going to go into more into depth of it. But that's basically like in, the immediate sort of aftermath of her disappearing. Like, there was just no trace of her. So this was what they
year
carried.
What was it again?
This was 2000. Mm. In the year 2000, so. In December, sorry.
Yeah.
So
I remembered you'd said December, but I couldn't remember what year it was.
Yeah.
But then I thought it must have been sort of 2000s because you said that she had a mobile phone.
So. Yeah, exactly. So obviously there was mobile phones around at this time. So as I say, that's the basic overview. So now, like, I actually watched a documentary about this. So mm-hmm. this is the next part I want to tell you. This is just, like, basically, like, about the documentary that right. I got. So on the 3rd of December 2000, the police actually staged a reconstruction of the girl's last movements. And it was reenacted by Sarah, her mm-hmm. friend who she'd been with, and Leanne's older sister, Michelle. What struck the police most was how black, roughly, Gil was. So, like, how pitch black.
Right.
The path that she'd taken, how unlit it was. They couldn't believe how dark it was. You know, but so they obviously did the reconstruction. The response was immediate. The police started to piece things together from some interesting sightings. So there were two witnesses, information that interested them the most. There was a lady that said that in the 2 weeks leading up to Leanne's disappearance, she had seen a man, and described him as, like, a rough-looking guy, with a dog hanging around the entrance to Roughly Gill. She was a little bit uneasy about this guy because he was trying to engage the children, trying to, you know, he was trying to have conversation with children that were obviously passing on their way to school or on their way home from school.
Yeah, that's not good. You don't chat to children.
No, exactly.
It's
just some random guy.
Unless you know them.
Yeah. So that they got the women to describe the man so that they could get an image of him. And then it was another lady who remembered hearing a scream around the time that Leanne had been last seen. The police know that Leanne would have entered Roughly Gill. So, you know, she heard a scream around that time. It might have been connected, maybe not. Mm-hmm. We don't know, obviously. But those two pieces of information became quite important to the police. So on the 4th of December, police published an image of the man that had been described by the first woman. And they questioned and found lots of men with dogs who walked through that area, and basically they eliminated all the men that they'd spoken
right.
to. So again, there were no further forward in their investigation at that point. While the investigation carried on, the police tried to find out everything that they could about Leanne. So, you know, they found out that she was a typical 16-year-old girl. She, you know, she had a lot to live for. She had a radiant smell. She would do anything for anybody. She looked after her grandma. She even went to church with her. You know, though she wasn't that keen on it, but she would always
go with her grandma.
Yeah, she would take her grandma.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, she'd been in the Brownies, and then she'd went on to the Girl Guides. And, you know, she had a very good group of friends. She was classed as a very popular girl. Obviously, there was an interview done with, like, a few people that had known of Leanne or whatever. So there was a woman who was Sister Janet Durbin. She was the minister at the church that Leanne went with her grandma to. And she said that Leanne stood out as she was always bright and shiny. She was always helpful. She used to like carrying the flag for the Brownies and the guides. And as she grew older, the church started a Saturday night fellowship for the teenagers. And Leanne used to ask, you know, lots of questions. They talked about all kinds of things that were going on in the world. And Leanne, you know, she would help in the kitchen, preparing the pizzas and chips and stuff. So she was just a nice girl, do you know what I mean? She just, you know, doesn't seem to have a bad bone in her body.
Yeah,
and just,
she sounds lovely.
Yeah. So after 3 weeks, there was still, like, no useful clues. But, of course, the police kept on going because, you know, they were determined to figure out what happened to her, you know, like...
Of course.
You know, they were obviously asking questions, you know, where was she, what happened to her? They obviously, everybody wanted to know. So months went by and... you know, there was still no sign of it, and it was like she'd just vanished into thin air. Like, where had she gone? You know, she'd entered this Roughly Gill and that was it.
Just never seen again.
So, by July the next year, Operation Conifer was in its 8th month, and although the physical searches had all but ended, the police hadn't stopped looking. They would get calls periodically that a body had been found, so, you know, they would go and get Leanne's DNA so they could eliminate it from her inquiries, because... you know, I think that's always the case, isn't it? When there's somebody, like, missing.
Yeah.
And a body gets found and they're missing people in that area, you know, they'll obviously rule out, you know, potentially who it could be. So on the 20th of August 2001, almost 9 months after Leanne's disappearance, DSI Greg received some news that changed the investigation completely. The police got a call. A dog walker was in the woods and saw what he thought was a bundle of rubbish that somebody had just dumped. He went over to the bundle... but soon realised it wasn't rubbish.
No.
He actually thought it was a dead animal in bags. And he gingerly opened the duvet cover and saw that there was some green plastic sacks tied with twine at the top. He broke into one of them and realised that this wasn't a dead animal. It was a dead person. And there had been loads of... there had been loads of dead bodies found that weren't Leanne, but this one immediately felt different to DSI Greg. And it was found not far from where she was last seen, only 16 miles, so it wasn't too far away from where she had been last seen. And the body had been left in a shallow grave. So, of course, forensics were called. At this point, they didn't know who it was. They obviously worked out that it was a female mm-hmm. body. And it was found that the body had been wrapped in 10 plastic bags, and the bags had been put on, like top and tail. So, like, you'd obviously over one, yeah. and you know what I mean? Like, on the bottom of one and on the top, on yeah. top, and then sort yeah. of tied round. The final bag had been put over the girl's head and secured with an 18-inch dog collar with a buckle. The body was then put in the duvet cover and carried into the woods. That's what just discovered that it happened. So capturing evidence from this point was going to be very crucial. For what seemed to have been a major crime that had been committed, obviously. So they basically wanted to get as much evidence as they could, like.
Mm-hmm.
So having examined the crime scene, a profile of the perpetrator began to emerge. The fact that there had been thought in how she had been tied up suggested that the killer had put a lot of thought into it.
Right.
Because like I say, the way she was tied up and stuff, just with all the around the bags and stuff, the killer had obviously
uh-huh.
you know, thought about what they yeah. were doing, basically. So the unknown body was taken to a morgue in Harrogate, and DSI Greg Chris Gregg followed there. He just knew it was Leanne Tiernan, lying on the table from the moment he looked at her. He just knew. Obviously they still had to do like a formal identity
yeah,
and stuff, but he just knew it was her for the minute that he saw her. So once the bags were opened, evidence was found that would prove key in identifying the killer. So when Leanne was found, her hands were tied behind her back with three cable ties. There was two black cable ties and a yellow one. A black one was round one wrist, the yellow one round the other, and they were connected by the other black cable.
Yeah, they were connected together.
Yeah, like a sort of daisy chain.
Yeah.
So she had been strangled with two ligatures. One was a dark woolen scarf with a red stripe running through it, and the other was a clear-coloured cable tie that was round her neck and pulled very tightly.
Ugh.
So not nice. There was a tuft of fibre identified on the back of Leanne's jumper. Although DSI Greg was certain that this was Leanne Tiernan, as I said, yeah, formal identification still had to occur. So they had already got her fingerprints from her diary at home, so they were able to match them to the body, and it was confirmed
yeah.
it was Leanne Tiernan, sadly. So the police informed the family of the news, of course. And then the police were, they were obviously, you know, they began to sort of figure out what happened to her, basically. So they were identifying like her time of death by using an insect expert, because there had been insects attracted to the body. When they found her, and basically the type of insects, like it was like how long they've been there, like they can work out how long they've been there, can help them decide how long that body's been
all right,
dead.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I know, which is crazy, because I say that it says insects attracted the body, the state that they are in can help determine the time of death there.
Right.
So the expert identified insects that wouldn't normally turn up until a few weeks after a body had started decomposing. So they think that her body had actually been frozen somewhere.
All right.
And it had been defrosted, nicer term to put it, which would obviously make her body decompose quicker.
Right.
So that's obviously what they think had happened to her. The police, so basically they think that she hadn't been where she was found for very long, basically.
Right.
She'd obviously been somewhere else.
She'd been somewhere else first and then put there.
And then put there. So the police think that she could have only been buried where she was found for maybe like a week. So, as I said, meaning that she'd been kept somewhere else for the rest of the time. Bear in mind, this is like 10 months later. So,
yeah.
You know, she'd obviously been kept somewhere for
a while.
So
basically, she's been kept in a freezer.
Yeah, that's what they think, basically. So the big question was, well, where?
Yeah.
Where was she kept? Like,
and
Exactly, where's she been all this time? So a way to find out was something called nasal washings, which basically could determine where someone took their last breath. So that's basically,
I think it's something to do with your nose.
Yeah, basically. So they called in a pollen expert called Patricia Wiltshire, She was called in to retrieve pollen from Leanne to see if she could envisage the sort of place that she had been. So they know that she had been buried in the woodland, but had she been anywhere else? Had she been kept anywhere else? So you have like pollen and spores, and like there's like obviously lots of pollen and spores in the environment, and in a mixture, and if someone goes along and picks them up, they will like they'll have certain mixtures of pollen and different amounts of pollen and spores on them. So like unbeknown to us, as we're walking around the world, we'll obviously get like pollen and spores in our body that will obviously not affect us. Yeah. We'll not know anything about it. I guess that's how where hay fever comes from, by the people that sort of ingest.
Never pollen. Really thought about it, to be honest.
But clearly, that's kept on your body. So this pollen expert, you know, she knows like where the plants live and the function and the function of them. So she can actually envisage a place, you know, to help the police sort of locate the area that she's been in. That's because she mad. Knows where these particular spores
that's
and
really good though, eh? Like
yeah,
well, the things that honestly, they can do to find like things like that out.
The thing is, I mean, she knows, she finds out a lot more, and when later on when we actually find out where she was, she actually goes to the scene and she's like, oh my god, this is exactly what I envisaged. Really? Like, because she just knew just from getting like scrapings
wow,
from her and
that's
stuff.
Amazing.
Totally. So yeah, so she took samples from her nose, and she also washed her hair very carefully. And from the washing, she was able to get some pollen grains and spores that Leanne's hair had picked up. And later, she worked on the duvet cover, and what she found on there matched up with what was found in Leanne's hair. And she found she had pollen spores, plant spores, fungal spores, and she also found some wood which were from conifers and flowering trees. And they were charred, which led Patricia to think that she'd been in contact with something that had been burned, maybe like a bonfire, as there was hardwood and softwood.
Mm.
Patricia said that she thought the area was a very neglected and downtrodden garden, and that had a bonfire in it. She was also able to say that there was a privet hedge, either a clam or clamson tree nearby. Also, the ground area was very neglected with the brambles and weeds. And so, you know, she gave all that information to the police, which...
That is amazing, just by taking samples from a body that you can find all that
out. Yeah, so like I say, she's just that she can just basically paint a sort of scene of the area that this, you know, this girl has been in. And as I said, I'll...
Yeah.
When we find out where she's been, you know, it'll sort of match up.
Mm.
So police, you know, they just needed to find a suspect with a garden that matched. But obviously this was proven quite hard, as with the decomposition of Leanne's body, it had obliterated any chance of DNA or fingerprint evidence.
Mm.
So they had an idea of where she'd been, but it's just like trying to find a match to that,
well,
isn't it?
Can you imagine the amount of people who have probably got gardens that aren't very well looked
well,
after?
Exactly, there's probably quite a lot to
yeah, exactly. Not everybody has time to be doing their gardens all the time.
No, definitely not. So, I mean, you know, I suppose in the case at this point, it doesn't, I suppose, narrow it down very well, but I suppose it gives them an idea of where she has been. But as I said, that idea could still be a massive area.
Yeah.
So the police, you know, they had to go back to basics, hoping that something would point them in the right direction of Leanne's killer. And that was there was dog hair on duvet, which was like what they thought might help them find it, because that was quite a significant thing, was that they found some dog hair. So the police wanted to find out where, of course, where the cable ties came from and where the dog collar came from, because they thought that would help them.
Oh, the dog collar and the dog hair, surely that's going to help.
So the team, they were now trying to build up a forensic picture, so the items themselves meant nothing. Like, you know, the dog collar, they didn't actually mean anything, really. But once you find out the backstory, then that's when they can become quite relevant. So the fibre that they found on Leanne's jumper was carpet fibre. And carpet experts gave them the type of carpet it very likely came from. So just from a small fibre. The dog hair on the duvet grabbed the team's attention. The dog hair had decent roots, which if it had been human hair, they would have been able to DNA test it. But the problem was that no one had ever DNA tested dog hair in the UK.
Okay.
But the police found out that there was a university in America that established a method to carry out the DNA testing on dog hair. So that was their next port of call, to do a mass DNA screening. So if it came off, then that could be the breakthrough that police needed. So basically, if they could find
would
a way.
Would I just tell you, like, give you the breed of the dog?
Yeah, the breed of the dog, yeah, which would obviously help.
I just assumed that they'd be able to, that they would do that in the UK.
Clearly not. Mm. I mean, they may do it.
Because as soon as you said the dog care, I thought, oh, well, test that and you'll find, at least find out what kind of dog it is.
But back in 2000, that was not something that was done in the UK.
Maybe they do it now.
They might do it now, you're right.
They should.
And they should, definitely. So information about the cable ties had been unearthed as well. So they found out where they were manufactured. Three of them took them nowhere, but the yellow one was manufactured by a UK company. And what was most interesting about that was that 90% were used by the Royal Mail.
The Royal Mail?
So 90%.
90%, that's a
of those particular yellow cables were used by the Royal Mail.
So are we thinking of postage?
Could the killer be someone who had connections with the Royal Mail, you ask?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking a postman here, or postwoman.
Yeah. So the twine used to tie the plastic bags also had a story to tell. It was a unique twine. They had been put together so they knew if they could find more, they could basically match it. The leather dog collar around her neck was manufactured in Nottingham. Many millions were sold worldwide, so they went to every pet shop in Leeds that sold them, but they got nowhere with that at that point.
I take it there was no dog hair like on the collar then that they could have...
No, it doesn't seem to... Yeah. There was just dog hair on the duvet, that was all the place that was said that they had found it.
I suppose if it's a leather one then, I was just thinking, because when we had the dog, it was like a sort of more... I don't know what it was made, I can't remember what it was made of, but it was one that, like, not a leather one anyway, so, like, hair would stick to it.
Aye.
Yeah, but if it's leather, I suppose that's, get a quick wipe and it wouldn't have anything on it.
True. So Peter Grant, he was part of the team, he flew out to America, and he managed to obtain a DNA dog profile, so now the police could organise the UK's first mass dog screening to help identify Leanne's killer. So he basically went out to the university, asked them to sort of show him how they go about, you know, doing the DNA testing. So he basically was able to come back to the UK and obviously do this big screening thing as well. So back in Leeds, you know, police, whilst he was out there, they were, you know, they were still contacting manufacturers who all said that they only supplied to pet shops. 113 manufacturers were tried and they all said the same. The 114th and last manufacturer that was tried, which was from Liverpool, said that they did supply to a private customer who was from Leeds.
Oh.
And had bought one. In fact, he hadn't bought one, he'd bought six. And had paid for it on a credit card.
Oh, even better.
So going back to your point about the hair, the fact they had six dog collars means that dog collar might not have even made it onto a dog. If he'd bought six of them.
Yeah, that's
I didn't
very
want to say
true.
That way, but...
No, that's very true.
I mean, it might not have made it onto the dog collar because it might never have been on the dog. So anyway, so he bought it on a credit card. So this was, of course, the moment that DSI Greg and his team had been praying for.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they'd got a name of somebody that could be connected. And the name of the customer was a Mr. J. Taylor. John Taylor, his name was.
Oh, do you know what? I just immediately thought J as in J-A-Y.
Oh, sorry.
Like,
no, I just... I meant his name is John.
Okay. I was thinking of J. Taylor. Right, no, so John Taylor.
John Taylor, his name was. Sorry, I should have sort of specified that. It's just the way it was...
yeah, I get what you mean now. It was just the initial. Yeah.
So finally, 10 months into investigation, police had finally got a suspect. They found out that he worked for a company called Parcel Force, which is part of the Royal Mail.
Part of the Royal Mail, yeah.
Yep, he lived at home on his own. He had been divorced for 4 years. He did have kids. He had never been in trouble with the police. People knew him as John the Pet Man. He kept himself to himself, and they quickly found out that he had been a bit of a living a bit of a nocturnal life as a poacher.
Right.
So he was used to being out in the dark.
Yeah.
So the connection between the dog collars and the cable ties was just too much for them to ignore. They were like,
yeah, of course.
This guy's very interesting. So on the 16th of October 2001, police made their move and arrested John Taylor. Of course, he denied any connection with Leanne. He said he hadn't done anything wrong. He denied he had certain pets or animals that the police were interested in because of, obviously, their animal DNA. And news of the arrest soon travelled around the area. And neighbours, you know, they were all shocked as they would, you know, say hello to him. He used to sell pet food. One neighbour said that her kids used to go over to his house to buy pet food for their rabbits. So
he'll have just seen just like a normal guy, wouldn't he? Just a nice guy.
As they often are.
Exactly. That's what I mean. If you're going to let your child go to that house, then obviously you think that this is, don't begin and dodge about him, do you?
Exactly, just obviously.
This is a nice guy. You can obviously send the kid over to get to buy some pet food. You don't think anything of it.
Exactly, you just think he's just a normal, quiet guy, but yeah.
It makes you wonder, though, doesn't it, who you're living next to?
Well, that's the thing, you just don't know, do you? Could be anybody.
That's scary.
Mm-hmm. So Taylor, you know, he was taken in for questioning while forensics searched his house. The immediate thing that struck police was that there were no carpets in the house.
All right,
just
okay.
Bare floorboards everywhere. Mm-hmm.
And considering there was a carpet fibre, wasn't there?
Exactly. And they did say it appeared that in some rooms that he had only recently taken up the carpets.
Mm-hmm.
But, unlucky for him, there were tufts of it still attached to nails on the floor, and they matched mm-hmm. the fibre that was found on Leanne's jumper. So the evidence the police needed kept on coming.
Mm.
Remember the black cable tie that police had found around Leanne's head?
Mm-hmm.
They found some tied around the fence in the back garden. Exactly right. The same manufacturer and code.
Coincidence? Mm-hmm. Think not.
They found two more dog collars in the house that matched the dog collar that led them to Taylor's house to Taylor in the first place.
Right.
There was also rabbit netting found, which matched the twine that had been used to tie the green bags together. So with the evidence mounting up on police, it might not up on police.
I was going to say, was it the police that did it?
No, sorry. With the evidence mounting up, the police brought the pollen expert, Patricia, to the house.
Mm.
And she went into the garden and she said it was very much like she had envisaged. She just couldn't believe it. She could not believe it at all. She said there were remains of two bonfires, which was the elements that she'd found in Leanne's hair and on the duvet. And they were on the left hand side of the garden. Everything just came to life for her as she described the garden to a T. So everything that she had envisaged, she was standing there.
She
going,
basically just walked into what she'd
And that just amazes me, because I'm like, how amazing. Can you find that from like little, obviously, bits of pollen or spores or whatever that she's found up Leanne's nose and her hair. Uh-huh. And that's she amazing. Actually described that. And I just don't even think of things like that. Like,
well, you don't, do you? Like, you don't think that there's experts on all these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how long would that have taken for people to get to this level?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just... I just keep saying it. It's just amazing, isn't it?
I think she was kind of like... It probably was quite, I don't want to say satisfying, because that's the wrong word for why she's there, but it was probably quite good for her knowing how good she is at her job, if you know what I mean.
I get what you mean by satisfying. It would be, because that's her job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So although it might sound sort of wrong saying satisfying, but that is her job.
Yeah, so
she's getting job satisfaction, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah, job satisfaction by, you know, describing this.
And the satisfaction to know that she's helping.
Yeah.
So maybe satisfaction, it depends on what context you're using it in.
I know, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, of course.
She obviously would be so probably proud of herself that she has been able to describe this area, and it's been exactly as she
should be proud of herself. That's fantastic.
100%, yeah. So, you know, faced with all the evidence against him, Taylor admitted he killed Leanne.
Ugh.
But he tried to claim that it was an accident, and of course Taylor gave his version of events. So
okay, this should be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So he said that he had gone to Hoffley Gill in the afternoon to take his dog for a walk when he saw Leanne walking down the path. He grabbed her and told her not to scream. He had a scarf which he tied around her eyes as a blindfold, took his coat off, put it on Leanne and pulled the hood up. He somehow managed to walk her back to his house 22 minutes away without anyone noticing. They even crossed a busy road.
Okay, I'm wondering where the accidental part comes in, because there's not an accident about that.
Well, exactly.
Because you might have accidentally killed her, but what about the kidnapping that you're doing at the moment?
Well, exactly. That definitely wasn't an accident.
So nobody saw them,
I mean, obviously, again, it's one of those things, unless you actually see it yourself. I mean...
But he was walking her blindfold across the road. I mean, like...
Right, he had his jacket over it, and it would have been dark, so maybe people wouldn't
Well, they obviously didn't know, because surely people would have came forward.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, but the fact that he even managed to cross, like, a really busy road...
That's unbelievable.
...totally be unnoticed. So once they arrived at his house, he took her upstairs and tied her hands with the cable ties. She kicked out at him, and he grabbed her, and he says she fell on the floor and banged her head. And there was blood all over the place, and that's how she died. So he's basically saying that...
That's not what the autopsy said, though, is it?
Well, exactly.
Okay, so that's his version of events. Yeah.
But as you've just rightly said, it was a story that completely contradicted the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, police said to him that she hadn't died of a head injury, but strangulation. And obviously, you know, he would have known what he was doing because it was very tight. So,
but did he actually say, you know how he said that he's killed her accidentally? So what he's just said is that she fell and hit her head.
Mm-hmm.
But has he actually said what his intention was? Like, why he's taken her back to his house?
No, he's not, he never said that, no. Exactly. He didn't give that information. Mm. But, you know, clearly...
Well, he was obviously intending something.
Well, he was obviously intending something. I mean, maybe his end thought wasn't that he was going to kill her. I don't know. Maybe he was going to...
Ransap, or maybe he was going to rape her.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, he might have had... Whatever his intentions were, they were wrong.
Yeah, well, of course. But I was just wondering, because he said that it was an accidental death, I was just wondering if he explained why he did...
Well, it certainly never came out in this documentary, because the documentary was basically DSI. Greg was telling us a lot of this, so he certainly didn't say. So, you know, Taylor, he was doing his best to avoid a murder charge, but DSI Greg, he wasn't about to let that happen.
Yeah.
They put an identity parade together, and the lady who had seen the man with the dog hanging around talking to children picked him out. Mm. And the identification was a persuasive argument that this had been a well-planned-out crime, because obviously he'd been hovering around.
So he was basically just looking for a target.
Yeah, I think so. So that's why
he knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just an opportunist when he's just walking along and he's spotted Leanne and
exactly.
He's been waiting for somebody to come along.
That's right. He's been in there in the weeks beforehand to, I don't know, maybe eye up, just work it out, maybe
find somebody that you like the look of.
Yeah, exactly, like take his opportunity, I suppose.
Ugh, what a monster.
But there was one crucial bit of evidence missing.
Oh. I thought we had them, I thought we were all nailed here, like.
Well, in the garden, they found a dog buried in the garden.
Oh, no.
And they think that the dog had been hit over the head. But sadly, it was in such a state of decomposition that they decided not to pursue it to get DNA. So the dog DNA that they had got from the dog hair became unusable because they couldn't match it to that dog.
Right, okay.
Because obviously they wanted that to match him with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
But
so they think it's that dog that's buried.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, was he smart enough to know that the dog might...
So are we saying that he's killed the dog because the dog was evidence?
Yeah. Is that what we're thinking? That's what I get the impression. I mean, it's not obviously said that that's the case.
Well, that's kind of what I thought there.
But I don't know why necessarily the dog would have been... Especially if the dog had been hit. It's not like the dog had just died.
Yeah.
But if they've seen the
dog... People do bury their dogs in the gardens. You know, like my friend's got all sorts in her garden.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're like to actually hit over the head, then I'm thinking that he maybe did think that the dog could be evidence.
Yes, that could catch him out. Yeah. So has he actually killed the dog on purpose?
That just makes it... I mean, it's a horrific case, obviously, to kill anybody, but that just makes it even worse.
Mm-hmm. I know. So officers continued to question Taylor. He denied freezing Leanne's body, but the police know that her body was somehow frozen through the medical evidence that they had.
Yeah, so it definitely was.
Yeah. So Taylor's story was that after he killed her, he didn't know what to do with her body, so to start with, he took it into the back garden and put Leanne's body under a lot of pallets and tried to hide it that way until he could think of what to do with her. Police know for certain that Leanne had been frozen, but they just didn't know why. Maybe he thought it was a wiser to keep the body inside his house, and another theory was that he kept her body as a trophy. But again, that's just a theory.
That's just them kind of wondering.
Yeah. So next, he said that he had took her to the woods just days after killing her, but police again knew that her body had only been in the woods for a maximum of a week.
Yeah, of course. He obviously doesn't realise what they can find out, what all these experts can find out.
Exactly.
But I suppose I don't blame him for that, because I wouldn't know that. I wouldn't know that from a body that they'd be able to do all the pollen stuff
and all
that.
Yeah, because they probably just thought, he probably doesn't realise that they can figure out that actually she's not been there that long or whatever. And apparently there was a witness who saw a man a week before Leanne was found lifting a bundle out of the boot of the car that matched Taylor's description in car. So he had only put her there a week before.
Yeah.
Which
they knew that anyway.
Well, exactly. So Taylor was charged with Leanne's kidnap and murder. And that was 18 months after they had found her.
Right.
And with the overwhelming evidence, he did actually change his plea guilty, because I think he'd obviously had not guilty to start with.
Uh-huh.
And he was convicted and told by the judge that he would never be released from prison. But that actually changed because there was a new sentencing act that came in. So he was sentenced to 30 years, because I think the new sentencing act was that you actually had to give an amount of years.
You're right, okay. You couldn't just say you're going to spend the rest of your
basically,
life.
Yeah, basically, yeah, you actually had to give
a number.
Like, a number of years. So he was actually sentenced to 30 years. And the police, obviously, they actually decided to open some cold cases, as they didn't think that this was Taylor's first crime.
Right.
So they did.
That happens quite a lot, though, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
When they catch somebody and they're like, no, yeah. I think he's done this before.
So I can't remember how many they obviously looked into, but they did tie him to two other rapes that happened. So
he did rape Leanne?
No.
No, just killed her.
I think now, knowing, like, because I said he pleaded guilty to two rapes, so I do wonder whether that was his initial motive.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Was
that.
To maybe rape her, and for whatever reason, maybe she was making a big fuss and trying to get away, and that's how he's ended up strangling her out of rage
or
whatever.
Well, he said that she kicked out at him, so if she's struggling, maybe he's just tried to, I mean, he might not have meant to kill her, he's maybe just tried to sort of subdue her, and he strangled her, and she's went too far, and then after that, he's, you know.
Well, exactly.
But it doesn't matter.
But no, it doesn't matter, he's still committed
a horrendous
crime, and.
And the fact that he was actually waiting for somebody, you know, the fact that it was all planned out, that he was, it wasn't a spur, not that, you know, spur of the moment is just as bad, but like,
he obviously had the intention of committing some kind of crime. Let's say we don't know his true full intentions, but it obviously didn't end well at all. And in the documentary, I did see, like, there was, like, footage of where her body was found and stuff. He didn't obviously, I think you saw a bit of her hair, actually, in it, which wasn't really nice, but you saw, obviously, like, the green bags and stuff. And, yeah, it was just like, whoa.
But I am actually amazed at how they solved it.
I know, that woman, I mean, that was what got me about the case, because obviously she actually was on the documentary and just sort of, you know, explaining it all about what she did and how she did it. And then you kind of thought, oh, yeah, that's quite clever, blah, blah, blah. But then when they actually, you know, they discovered the actual place, and then she obviously went to the garden and was just like, wow, this is exactly what I had in my head, you know?
She must have been thinking
that was
the
picture
I had
in her mind, and how right she was. I mean, just, like I say, just by taking some scrapings from her nose and washing her hair and getting, you know, stuff out. It's, I mean, the thing is, we've all got stuff on us that we pick up from the environment around us. And, I mean, we think nothing of it day to day, but if something ever happened to us, then that could actually be crucial evidence in figuring out, like, where we've been and
could end up solving her.
I know, even to know when you've taken your last breath, potentially. That's just mind-blowing. I mean, technology and what
we've come
do
so far.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I'm just glad he got caught.
Yeah, me too, because, I mean, evil.
Evil monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. And thanks to everybody for listening. If you'd like to follow us on social media, on Instagram and Twitter, we are crime_divers_pod. If you want to email us, we're crime_divers_pod@outlook.com. YouTube is Crime Divers Podcast.
TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok. I'm losing. I started off so well there. TikTok is Crime Divers Podcast, which is all one word. If you'd like to join us on Patreon, you get bonus episodes, you get early access to episodes, ad-free episodes. Mm-hmm. That's patreon.com/crimedivers. If you'd like to buy us a coffee, buyusacoffee.com/crimedivers.
And if you haven't already, as always, please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.